One hell of a call by the VAR brings you.
That's terrible.
Welcome to this week's episode of Phoenix City. We are down to Frosty. He's away. So the three of us are here tonight.
It's nice to have you back, Pat.
Thank you very much. Good to be back.
It is nice to have you back, but it seems to be that you don't want to be in the same room as Frosty anymore.
If you looked at it in a very literal sense, I think every episode for the past 2 months, it's either been me or him hosting.
Indeed.
And never both of us in the room together. But I'm not going to give any comment on that. You can take your own assumptions.
But there's some sort of feud going on, is there?
I'm not sure I should really comment on it publicly. Frosty might not be too keen on that. We need to have that conversation offline, I think. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Just for the record and for the listeners, I'm Team Frosty.
I think everybody's Team Frosty, right?
Cam?
I have to be Team Frosty. I've known him for 18 years. I have to be Team Frosty.
I mean, that seems like all the more reason to
be
turn
honest,
away from the team.
To be honest, I'm also Team Frosty because I much prefer it when he hosts this thing to me because I get a week off. So I think it's unanimous. We've passed it. Frosty is a new host. And so in his absence, I will host the podcast tonight.
Actually, we should do it next time. Next time we're all four here,
yeah.
He hosts, you sit down and have an enjoyable night.
We did one of those once. When was it? Oh, it was after we had talked to Rob. And the three of us were there, and Frosty was talking to us about that, and so he was interviewing us, kind of. But that was a weird experience.
He's come a long way since then. He's a much better host now,
fully fledged host. And
apart from the massive dead air gaps in last week's report,
I mean, you just leave those to your producer to fix.
Which we did. So the folks at home will never have known, but they were definitely.
Well, no, they knew.
They knew because it's in all the outtakes.
I put it in the outtakes. I wasn't letting you guys get away with that. I put it in the outtakes. Anyway, tonight we're doing something a bit different. We are recording a crossover worst game Phoenix City podcast right now. So this is the Phoenix City one that we're doing tonight. That means
We're doing both tonight.
We're doing both tonight, but this is the one that you're listening to right now is Phoenix City. As you can probably tell, because you downloaded Phoenix City. That'd be the worst troll is that someone downloads Phoenix City and it's actually just the worst game, and we didn't tell them. But that means the worst game is on TV right now. It's just got to halftime as we speak. Buzz on the telly.
That's not a highlight.
No, Mark Redan's about to say that elbowing people in the face is perfectly fine, but
don't see anything wrong with it.
No. So that's happening while we record. But
I wonder how he feels about bobsleds.
Yeah, we'll get to that soon. We'll talk about the Phoenix now, and the current version of the Phoenix, not the one from February 2017. Sorry. About the loss, no, the draw. It felt like a loss, didn't it?
It did feel like a loss.
So the Perth Glory won all over the weekend.
It was very weird because coming into it against league leaders, you'd absolutely take a point.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
100%.
Yes.
It's just a no-brainer. Of course you'd take a point.
Yeah.
Instead, it felt like a loss because we felt like we should have had all three.
Putting aside the VAR incidents, a draw in that game feels like a loss. No matter what happened there, we were looking so good for so much of that game, and the last 20 minutes we faded badly and let them back into the game, but it still feels like a loss.
I mean, I disagree with that point. I disagree that we faded badly. I think Perth played much, much better when Castro came on.
Well, and a big factor of that as well is we looked like we'd brought Lowry on to man-mark him.
We definitely
Well, he was only on for a few moments before he was gone, but that's what it looked like in those few moments for sure. And so obviously losing the guy you've brought on to man-mark their playmaker out changes everything.
And so
I agree. I don't know that we faded necessarily, but a plan we had to counter a thing they were doing, we never really got to implement because we lost the key man for it.
Yeah. So we just talk about that because that's the big talking point out in this game is the VAR.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about one thing first. I think there is no argument that this is the best football we've played this season.
Yep.
I would say probably even last season. This is some of the best football the Phoenix played in a long time.
We legitimately played the best team in the league so far off the park.
Yep.
By a long way. They had zero shots of any kind in the first half.
Agreed.
and we had multitudes. We should have scored two or three in that first half.
Yeah.
Burns should have slotted his. We got the one from Krishna, and I think there was one or two other half chances there.
Well, actually, I think Burns should have passed to Fenton, but
sure.
Either way, that should have been a goal.
Yeah. It was a perfect opportunity.
Yeah, and so I think that would be my only concern about this, is that we still aren't scoring enough goals. Yeah. When we're being that dominant, we should be scoring some of those goals. We ended up getting one goal, but we should have had more. That game could have been done and dusted by halftime, and then the VAR doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think anything more than 2-0, 3-0... Okay, 3-0 would have seemed overly biased towards us. I think 2-0 was where we should have been.
We had three good chances, right? We could have scored all of them.
You're never going to score all of them, though, in a game. You need to create enough of them that you can score the 20% or 30% of the chances you get.
Sure. We had 10 shots on goal in the first half. If we'd scored those three chances, that's your 30%. Yeah. We should have scored those three.
True. Fair enough. Yeah. The one goal that we did score was from essentially a defensive mistake where the defenders just played the ball right into the path of Roy. We still didn't create something like Perth did for their goal. They created that chance.
At least it's a real goal from open play.
Yep, totally.
I'll take that as a positive.
First time this season we've done that.
It feels like, despite playing really good football, my only criticism is it still doesn't feel like we're actually putting away the chances we should. And we need to fix that.
Yes, I totally agree. You've hit the nail on the head. When you do take 10 shots to only get that one goal, that pretty much sums up everything that's wrong with the Phoenix this season so far.
But we were creating more chances. And
absolutely.
This was a much more positive performance.
Yeah,
the fact that we're getting players like Burns in positions where he could score was different. We haven't done that so far this season. And everything about the performance led to those things happening. The high press that we were employing on Perth meant that they couldn't do anything. They were having to launch the ball long, which, unlike us, they did not want to do that. They were being forced into it. Otherwise, they'd lose possession in the back third. And that was really good to see.
Take out the missed opportunity. I actually thought Burns played really, really well. Creatively, he was the reason that the defender made the error.
Yeah, totally.
Because it was going to be a great ball through to Singh. Obviously the defender manages to get his toe onto straight to Krishna, who slots at home. But he was finding space and finding men, doing those things that Burns can do that he hasn't been doing, bar the finishing this season. So
yeah, all right. I do want to jump to VAR because I think it's
that's fine.
The biggest thing to talk about. I mean, I was going to come back to the stuff, but let's talk about VAR and the absolute shambles that we saw on the weekend. My opinion on Sunday of this was that this is one of the worst decisions I've seen on a football pitch, VAR affected or not. My position, having seen the replays since and heard the explanation, has changed somewhat, but I'm still nowhere near this being a red card. I don't think you can make this case for a red card in any way, and I think everyone in the room right now, and probably everyone listening to this podcast, agrees with that.
Yeah. For the record, let's just say what we would have given as the call here.
Is this for knowing all the information I know right now?
Yeah.
Yellow card.
Play on.
I give a foul, no yellow.
Cool. So that's different for everybody.
Yep.
Should we just explain why we think those things?
Yeah.
I'll go first. Mm-hmm. I think that there is absolutely zero intent here from Lowry. Yep. He gets unlucky, but he has still put himself in a position where he has fallen on the ground and gone sliding towards a player and collected them with his studs. There is nothing, no disagreement there. That happens. I think that, therefore, it is reckless because he could have done damage to a player. There is no excessive force here whatsoever. The player didn't get injured. The player just stands up and keeps walking away, and it's happening at essentially low speed, but I think this is still a reckless challenge. That's why I think it's yellow. Dave?
Yeah, I largely agree with that, but I just don't get to the threshold of reckless. I think it's careless of anything. I think there's certainly an argument for the fact that he wins the ball and he slips. I think he knows he's going into a 50-50, and he carelessly chooses to protect himself by the way he pulls that leg up from under him and that kind of stuff. He's not thinking about the other player around him, which I see as careless rather than reckless.
Yep. And Cam, you're in no foul camp.
Yeah, I see he's slid and kicked the ball away, then slid past another Knicks player who was there. So he hasn't even seen the Perth player at all, and they have just had an incidental collision. Yes, I agree, he has hit him with the studs. There's no argument that he's actually hit him there, but I think all of that contact is completely incidental and he doesn't know anything about that player being there. The player doesn't know anything about Lowry doing what he's doing. There's no intent. There's no foul. It's just a coming together of two guys.
Yeah. So what would turn this into a red card is the words excessive force.
Yep.
And that for me just doesn't exist in any way. There is no excessive force here. If you think about if Lowry did actually commit a red card here, what would he be doing? He'd be jumping off his feet and putting those studs straight into the player at speed. And nothing about this is like that. And so the fact that they've shown red here, barring the way that they got there, the fact that they've shown red here absolutely astounds me that they can make that decision. The fact that it stemmed from VAR, who had the opportunity to see this for what it was and not in real time when it happened then, and thought that the threshold was reached to intervene, is puzzling to me.
Yeah, because I end up at a position where the only way I can see a red card here is essentially in still frames.
Yeah,
it's extremely slow motion. You need to be showing frames that show studs on shin, and that's all you look at. You ignore everything else.
And I've seen some screenshots of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of those screenshots
are bad.
And so the thing here is, by the time the ref in the middle gets called over, there is immense pressure on him to get play underway. He's not going to spend 2 or 3 minutes watching every angle, watching it in slow motion, watching it in full speed, watching, you know, reverse angles. He is going to watch what they show him first up. And we don't know what they showed, but I'm pretty sure those feeds were some slow motion shots focusing in on the contact. And if you only saw that and you've stopped the game and everyone is, you know, essentially baying for the game to get bloody underway again because this is ridiculous, you're not going to take much longer than that. And I can see how the referee in the middle comes over and he sees whatever he sees and ends up going, oh, okay, you've called me over because you've taken the time to look at this a couple times and decided it's probably a red card because that's the only threshold here that we can care about. He can't go, oh, I think you should give a yellow. If he stopped the game, it's because he thinks there's a red card incident. And he sees those slow motions or still frames, of course he goes, oh, okay, yep, that confirms it.
Yeah.
Whereas the VAR in the box has had the time to watch the angles, watch the various speeds, and he's the one who needs to take into account the context. And he hasn't done that well enough. He hasn't gone, there's a slip. He hasn't gone and paid attention to the fact that he's not coming in challenging for that player at all. As you say, Cam, there's a man in between them. He can't even see him. He's gone in, eyes for the ball, and he's slipped on a wet patch of grass. It's unthinkable to me that you can't take that into account when you're going, is this a red card? And nothing about that context leads you to excessive force.
Yeah.
I think it can absolutely lead you to careless or reckless. I don't think it can go to excessive.
I know better than most that still frames don't tell a story. They don't tell the whole story. They only tell a little part of it.
Should we talk about a still frame of you ignoring Roy, shall we?
Yeah, we can do that if you like.
But Roy is literally upside down, falls on his face, and you just do not give a shit.
So do you want to cover that now?
Let's cover that now.
Okay, that's fine.
I've never seen someone give less of a shit.
So I looked at him as he went over, and as he's gone over and done his little handstand, because he's got his hands.
Oh, we didn't say that he did a handstand. We couldn't see.
He's got his hands there and his legs legs up in the air. I look up at the bench to see if someone's coming, and that's when they take the frame of me looking away.
No, because
and the next three frames, you can see my head turning back to him.
No.
But more importantly, do you go and help him at all? No,
I'm not allowed. You could lean over and say,
"Are you okay?"
Do you know what I did do?
You go back to shooting.
I looked at him and said, "Roy, are you okay? Roy, are you okay?" And do you know what he replied? Because my God, that impact was hard.
Yeah, from the far
really
end of the field,
hard.
All we could see is you have a glance down at him and back at the game.
Yeah.
That was it. That was the full extent. One quick little glance. Oh, look, he's dead. Better take some photos. That's what it looks like from the far end of the field.
Professionalism. That's never missing the proper image.
Like, I'm not saying you should.
I knew I couldn't shoot him because, he's already dead, obviously. I couldn't shoot him because I didn't have the right lens. So, but I asked him twice if he was okay. All I got back was a groan. And then I look and I see the physios coming over. There's nothing I can do. I'm not allowed to touch the player. So I literally cannot do anything. So that is what it is.
If he had knocked himself out, and he was lying there unconscious on his head, would you move the player?
I would have gone to the player, yes.
Yes, exactly.
But he wasn't lying unconscious.
No, that's a fair point.
You guys don't know because you haven't seen. We weren't there and didn't see.
We could see from 100 meters away that you did not give a fuck about Roy.
No, I checked him out.
How many texts did you get?
Fuck loads, man. Yeah. Honestly,
were all of them? Why didn't you do anything? Do you not care about Roy?
Why didn't you catch him?
Why do you hate Roy?
No, I got a little. Why didn't you catch him? And every single time I got that was, I'm not allowed to touch a player because I'm not. And then
what if a player came over to hug you after they scored a goal? Would you run away?
That's their choice.
I think at this point, Roy would choose to have you help him, to be honest.
Honestly, when I looked down, if I'd seen blood, obviously I'd have jumped in. If I'd seen he was unconscious, I'd have jumped in and done something. What I saw was a guy lying on the ground, rolling around, groaning, going, yeah, that's going to hurt, bro. That's fair enough. Are you okay? Are you okay? Anyway. Oh, the physio's coming. Let's move on. Funny though.
The only way this could have been funnier is if you like looked down at him and then just walked away.
Yeah.
I will think the funniest part of this whole thing was when you guys cheered when he popped back up again.
Oh yeah.
That was quite good.
Because he was upside down for a while. We could see his legs and disappeared. And then we just saw, he must have got up onto his knees or something. We just saw a head pop up and it was, yeah.
I don't know if it's better or worse, but he hit the one different hoarding.
That wasn't electronic.
So it's metal.
Yeah.
But it's a little, and it's got more of a stand behind it, but it's a little thinner than those big electronic ones.
Yeah. However, the big electronic ones are at knee height,
yeah,
and that's just below crutch
waist height.
Yeah. Yeah, so,
but there's a little less weight to the whole thing. Like, I think both options are bad,
yes,
just in different ways.
Yeah. If he'd gone into the one with his knees, that could have ended up in him getting subbed off. He's gone into this one with his thighs.
Speaking of which,
really
he's getting subbed off in the worst game of all time currently.
He got sliced by his own mullet before. We were talking about the difference between yellow and red cards. He got
taken out.
There it is. It's such a bad tackle. Like, that's
above the knee.
That's red every day of the week. Anyway,
so he was fine. And after he scored the goal, he posed for me for a photograph, which was quite nice.
Yeah, I saw that. It was a nice photo. Back to VAR. From the sounds of it, from what Ben Wilson, who's the head of referees, has put in his little referees blog about explaining the VAR from this weekend. Incidentally, two of the three incidents that the VAR intervened on, they just got wrong this weekend. He said that the referees have had their meeting, reviewed the footage, and decided it was yellow. And
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
The match review panel coming in going, there could be a yellow.
Well, this
has to stand.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll come to the match review panel shortly, because many thoughts there.
Exactly. That's the very last part of this. But him coming out and saying, as part of that, that it was supposed to be yellow, not a red, and so the VAR shouldn't have intervened, but also saying that the referee on the field didn't see it and the foul was given by the assistant referee. That makes a lot more sense to me why they got involved. I think if the referee had seen it, called the foul, had a chat to the player, the VAR would go, look, he's seen it. Saw what it was. Let's play on. The fact that the assistant referee gave it and then they gave no card means that the VAR must have felt implored to get involved and say, actually, we think this was red. Putting aside whether it should be red or not, I think that is what has caused it. The referee not seeing any of it is why they got involved.
So here's a question. Like, legitimately, I don't know. The VAR has intervened when one of the three officials on the field has seen it, made a decision, and given a foul and decided no card. So he has seen it.
Yep.
He has talked to the referee. They've decided it's a foul. They've decided it's no card.
Mm.
What part is the VAR, what right therefore does they have when, unless it's, what's the
clear and obvious error?
Clear and obvious error.
Yeah.
And that's basically where they've gone.
I think they genuinely believe this was clear and obvious error.
I think there's an element here of where the grey area lies in that, whether the referee seeing it or an AR counsel. I don't know the answer to that. My understanding of the VAR intervention is they should be leaving it alone if it's been dealt with on the field. Now, that doesn't necessarily say who should have dealt with it and who should have seen what. That's my understanding of the wording, but I could be wrong there, is that if they feel it's been dealt with on the field, so if it's a maybe red, maybe yellow, and on the field they've decided it's a yellow,
leave it alone.
Leave it alone. Don't relitigate that.
Yeah.
And in this case, you could make that same argument that the AR has seen it and felt it's a foul. If he felt it was more, he had more than ample opportunity to talk to the referee and say, I think you should give a yellow card here. Yeah, that happens all the time.
They literally stop play.
And doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So you'd have to say the AR doesn't think it's a yellow card. He thinks it's a foul. So has that been dealt with on the field? Probably.
I think the answer is yes.
And so then it becomes a question of how certain does a VAR need to be of a red card? And again, I don't know the answer here.
Hmm.
They need to believe it's a red card incident, right? But are we looking at the same threshold as, say, the MRP, where could this be a red card? Sure, all sorts of things could be red cards. That's a very low threshold.
Yeah.
That's the threshold. It's no wonder we are seeing such massive inconsistency with how VAR gets applied and what the outcomes are. Because if we're looking at things that could be a clear and obvious error, could be a red card, could be a penalty, then we should be stopping constantly and looking at all sorts of things that could be whatever.
Yeah,
but I have interpreted the way VAR's been implemented to mean they need to be pretty sure this is a red card. They need to go, this is a red card. I'm recommending, essentially, you give a red card here.
And that's why I think they genuinely thought that this was the case here. And I think that this is the slow motion problem.
Yeah.
That the slow motion problem.
They're the ones with the context.
That, exactly. They can watch it in real time if they wanted to. And I think what they've done here is watched it in slow motion, seen a player come in and very deliberately, because it's all in slow motion, everything looks like it's deliberate, put his studs into a player. And if you see that, then you go, this is red. If you watch it in real time, a player's just slid on the ground a little bit and fall into
some reasonably light contact.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think that this is, I think I saw the term death by slow motion used on Twitter. I can't remember who it was. I wish I could say who that was, but that's a really good analogy for me, is that Larry gets done by death by slow motion here. It only looks bad in slow motion, and that's what the VAR is looking at.
Yeah, and I think there's also the problem of if the two aren't necessarily on the same page. If could be a red card is what the VAR is thinking and doesn't express that adequately, I think this is at the low end, but could be, compared to the guy in the middle who thinks you called me over because you've seen a red card, that might well lead to the wrong outcome taking place, because he thinks someone's recommending a red card when actually just saying, oh, it's right on that threshold.
And you
make a call here, and, you know, that could lead to a very interesting outcome if one thinks one thing and the other thinks the complete reverse, really.
And I can't remember who it was, but someone said that here, and this was the same case a couple of weeks back when the penalty inside the box got overturned because it wasn't a handball, that kind of thing for the Phoenix.
Yeah.
This was that the VAR just said, hey, I think you should have a look at that, called a referee over and then shown them something. And of course the referee's going to go, you're showing this me to this because this is a red card, because that's the only thing you can be showing me right now. Of course they're going to go, this is red. If they say, oh, we're not sure if you saw this, just make sure that you know that this is what happened, we're not sure, could be red, then I think they get a very different thing. But at that point, we're stopping the game to send the referee to halfway.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be doing that in those cases.
Absolutely not.
And so I think this is stemming, and I think that the VARs here have been a little bit stitched up by the FFA implementation of it, where that threshold is not being well confirmed to anybody, and they're getting stitched up by the fact that they're not in the air game, that's a red card, give the red card.
I think we have to address also the personnel in this situation.
Sure.
Because Lightning doesn't strike twice, as they say, but it's now struck three times, I think, with this official.
Yeah. So Nick Waldron again was the VAR.
It's actually four, I think, across the league, if we include round one, the Fornaroli decision.
Was he on the Fornaroli one as well? I think.
So he was on Fornaroli. He was on the handball here for Durante. He was on the Brisbane.
Singh handball?
No. That was correct.
But still.
He was on the ruled out penalty in Melbourne against Melbourne City.
Yes.
Yes.
And now this.
Yeah.
I think you have to question, because that's four very clear and obvious mistakes the VAR has made, the same VAR.
Yeah.
There has to be a question.
And there's only been about six mistakes total that VAR has made this season. One of the interesting things that I didn't know so much, and this was, I think it was in Greg O'Rourke's interview in regards to the Rob interview that was done as well, which we'll come to soon as well. But I think he was saying that all of the other games in Australia, the VAR is based in the FFA office in Sydney, getting all the angles to the office there, and it's the same people generally. So Chris Griffiths-Jones does 50 games a season. He sits there on a Saturday night, spends 6 hours in a room, watches all the games, does all the VAR, so you get that consistency. Whereas Nick Waldron is over here because Sky can't get that footage to Sydney reliably, which makes sense, different country, that kind of thing. And so you have the official here doing 10 games a season. And so he's doing fewer games and doesn't have the same consistency we see across the rest of the league. And I don't think that mitigates the fact that he's clearly not doing the best job at it, because they've literally come out and said that's not what we intended VAR to be. But I think that goes some way to explain why we're getting the bad share of things compared to the rest of the league, where it's other than one or two incidents which have been sorted, not a problem this season. Everything else about VAR is much more like the FIFA World Cup VAR, where it's just not getting involved, than what we're seeing in Phoenix games.
I think in some ways, though, my fundamental issue with this is actually at a FIFA implementation level. I think the hierarchy on VAR is actually wrong.
Yeah.
I think you look at rugby and you look at cricket, where actually they've gone through their teething problems and they've ended up at a point that makes a lot of sense.
Where the VAR is God. They
Correct.
Make the call.
They make the call themselves, and they have carte blanche to overrule decisions on the field. And the FIFA setup still requires that the man in the middle is essentially the most senior referee. I mean, VAR, video assistant referee. They are at the same level as the men or women running the lines. They are there as assistants. And so it means in a situation like this, I was talking before about the pressure on the guy in the middle. He's having to run to the side and watch a video on a tiny, shitty screen on the sideline under a huge amount of pressure. And he's the one who has the final say and makes the call. He is the person in the worst position to make the call based on the video. That screen is rubbish. You're out in a stadium potentially pissing down with rain on a screen covered in water droplets and reflective light and all this shit. And he's the guy making the decision. That's insane.
You might know this. It's just an iPad, isn't it? Like, it's no bigger than an iPad.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the screen quality's not good at all, and he's not even really controlling it. Yeah. A person somewhere else is controlling what he's seeing. Obviously, he can talk to them. There's an audio link. Obviously, the VAR can be in his ear. The other assistants can be in his ear. But he is the last person who should be making this call. We should be in a position where we can have video referees who are actually overseeing everything. And if the guy in the middle wants to refer something upstairs, he can. But equally, the video referee has the ability to just overcall. Go, we're stopping play there. You're going back and awarding a red card to number five, yellow, you know?
Yeah.
And there's two things that this solves. One, I think it gets a better quality of video decision because we have a man with all the context and actually slightly more time and less pressure on them to make the right call. And there are, you know, other people in that box as well. They're talking. It's not just one man watching one screen. There's, I actually don't know, is it three or four of them up in the box? Just two. Up in the box looking at videos and all that kind of
the
stuff.
The World Cup had five. The A-League has two.
Yeah. There you go. And then you also have the solution to the problem, who's responsible. Because at the moment, who's responsible for this decision? Is it the VAR or is it the guy in the middle?
Technically, it's the ref.
Correct. He's the one who's awarded the red card.
Yeah.
Now, Waldron's made a decision to refer it to him. You can place some blame there if you'd like, but it's very hard to put the blame for the incorrect decision on one person. Whereas if a video referee comes in and goes, you're awarding a red card to number five, that's on him. And when it's a wrong decision, someone like Ben Wilson can go, here's how you got that wrong, and there's one person accountable for it. Whereas at the moment, it's a process that's accountable and a process that needs fixing rather than we're going to stand down that referee for a week because they got it wrong.
I would agree with that in one-off situations. It's the fact that there are multiple situations that have come up with the same referee.
Oh, correct. So I don't disagree with that, but it's also the same process.
But in this case, I don't blame Adam Kearsey for the decision whatsoever. I don't blame the AR who said this is a foul for this decision whatsoever. I blame the VAR, which was Nick Waldron.
Chris.
Because if Nick Waldron doesn't get involved, this is not a red card. But the fact that he gets involved says to the referee, this is a red card. You have to show red because
there is no other option.
Exactly. Once the VAR is showing something to the referee on the field, they have to change the decision because otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, and this is precisely right. We're seeing a huge percentage of decisions overturned once it goes to video review.
Yeah, once it went to review, I knew we were getting a red card here because it was the only thing that this could be for on the pitch. I had no idea what it could be for, but I'm like, we're going to see a red card here. Yeah. Then it came out. I wasn't shocked.
Yeah.
No. I was shocked that was the call, but no. I knew what was happening. Yeah. The players in the crowd, the rest of the crowd seemed to be absolutely shocked that this was the case. But as soon as the referee went over, I was like, there's a red card because that's what happens.
Because it had to be. There was no other reason to go.
Yeah.
I also think the referee in this game was poor. What was his name? Sorry, you mentioned it before.
Adam Kearsey.
Yeah, so he's lost control of that game.
Late in the second half, yes.
Yeah, it showed by the string of yellow cards, that most of which were unnecessary. If he'd had control of the game, this wouldn't have happened.
And highly inconsistent as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I'm as far along the line of this was a poor referee performance as you guys. Still not defending him, but there were yellow cards in this game that we absolutely deserve. Taylor delaying play when he was doing that.
And Ollie Sale.
And Ollie Sale.
The incident where a Perth player threw the first ball away, asked the ball boy for the other one, and then threw that away as well.
That should have been yellow too.
Absolutely a yellow card. It was right in front of the referee. He saw the whole thing and just was like, nah, that's fine. It was unbelievable. It was so in front of him. It would be impossible not to see it.
And given that he was yellow carding other players on our team for time wasting, that's what it is. I don't think his calls across the game were necessarily poor. I think maybe his decision making about what was yellow and what wasn't might have been, but that doesn't affect the game as much as
definitely just was. Definitely was.
I think that the reason I think he lost control here is a ref who's going to their pocket like that at just so willy-nilly says to me he thinks this is the way to get back in control. He knows he's lost control, and he's trying to get it back.
And that's fair.
And he didn't get it back at all.
And especially once the red card decision happened, he wasn't ever going to get that back.
No.
Like, that was so...
He's basically got the entire team offside because it's so obviously a wrong decision.
Yeah, the fact that nobody looked at this on the field, including the Perth players. The Perth players weren't appealing for a yellow. Nobody's going, that must be a yellow. Nobody talked to the ref and went, well, why aren't you showing a card there? Tony Sage, not Tony Sage, Tony... there's so many Tonys.
Popovich.
There's three Tonys. It's Tony Sage, Tony P, and Tony Popovich. But Popovich wasn't going off at the fourth, being like, why isn't there a yellow? Why is that no yellow? Nobody was. And then for them to pull this out, I think the Perth players were probably just as bemused as the Phoenix players were.
Yeah.
Anyway, that brings us to MRP, who have decided that they're not going to overturn Lowry's red card, which, again,
and they're right.
I knew exactly what was going to happen here, because their threshold is, would any referee, given all the evidence, show a yellow card?
Yeah.
And the answer here is yes, they would.
Possibly.
And that's enough. Yeah. It needs to be like, so
it's basically, could a reasonable referee show a yellow for this? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So the only way that I think that this could have not, that this could have been overturned is if that what they had shown the yellow for, sorry, the red for was not serious foul play, excessive force, but it would be for violent conduct, as in the tackle's finished and then Lowry's kicked somebody. That clearly didn't happen, so that would be wrong, and you wouldn't be showing a yellow card for violent conduct for kicking someone. You would be showing nothing.
I think even if they'd written the words excessive force.
Yeah.
Again, you could appeal that and say, well, no,
exactly.
You couldn't give excessive force here. But they will have written serious foul play. That's open to a reasonable amount of interpretation for exactly which part of it was serious foul play.
And I am genuinely okay with this, because this is consistent. At least the MRP is consistent in this. There are incidents where players got the wrong... It was the wrong player got sent off, and they overturned those. But there are other incidents where it's these things that are all in the grey area that they just don't overturn. And I'm okay with that, because... they are always doing it the same way.
I'm okay with it in this situation because, as Pat said, it's consistently the same decision.
Yeah. No, so I'm okay with the decision itself. I'm not okay with how fucked the MRP process is, because there are serious problems with that process, and there have been for some time.
Agreed, and it's now worse under a VAR system.
Correct.
Where the threshold for VAR to go up is very easy, but the threshold for MRP to come down is very impossible. Hard.
And so we also still have these other dumb loopholes. So in this case, we have a red card that no one thinks should be a red card that remains with a one-week suspension. We had a VAR incident for an eye gouge that... Don't even get me started on how the VAR awards a yellow card for an eye gouge. It's unbelievable. Wow. But the player is red carded because it's their second yellow, and the MRP cannot look at it because it was a yellow card.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable. The situation of an eye gouge with no suspension, we have a guy who no one thinks should have got a red card, not even the head of referees, has to serve a one-week suspension because the review process rules don't allow them to fix both of those decisions.
What you said is not quite right. Tellerine does have a one-match suspension for getting a second yellow card.
But they do not have the ability to review the
eye gouge. This should be 3 weeks violent conduct, and they can't.
Because he was awarded a yellow, they can't look at that because it was dealt with on the field.
And that's the problem with the MRP. But again, I knew that would be the case going in.
Oh, correct.
At least they're consistent.
We definitely know the rules for this, but it shows how broken the rules of the MRP are.
Yeah.
They need to fix that. So there's actually the ability here to fix these sorts of problems.
And the reason that these are issues is because they actively avoided re-refereeing games when they set this up. They didn't want to go through a game and re-referee them.
Correct.
The VAR is re-refereeing every single game now, and they are making calls that are dodgy in one way and bemusing in others. And things, most of the time, we could have just left it with what the on-field decision was, and that's fine, and we'd be happy there. It's not improved by the fact that the VAR has re-refereed the game. They got that right. We shouldn't be re-refereeing games at all, and that means we shouldn't have the VAR. But
well, I'm fine with having the VAR, but I think that the issue here is that for the MRP, we've set up really strict guidelines, and we've stuck to them. They're very clear.
Which is good.
And they make sense, and we follow them.
Do that for the VAR.
They reckon they came up with rules, and we ignore them entirely. We have not had consistent application of what they seem to think were very clear rules. So you now are in a situation where the stage that should have the slightly fluffier rules to fix up bad decisions is the one with the most strict hand-tying rules possible, whereas the one that should actually be implemented very rigidly is where all of the fluffiness lies and where all of the mistakes are getting made, and then we have this upper court that can't fix any of it.
The MRP
it's backwards. We need to flip that.
Absolutely. The MRP doesn't have the ability to change a game on its head like happened on the weekend like the VAR does. The VAR changed that game. Perth were knocking on the door. Someone said it to me after the game. Perth were knocking on the door to score a goal there for the last 20 minutes, but the VAR came in and kicked that door open.
Yeah, that's a really good point. As I from that point that Castro came on,
yeah,
they were starting to get into the game from that slightly before that.
If a team was going to score after Castro came on, it was definitely going to be Perth.
Absolutely.
Not
so,
us.
And that changed that. So that change was excellently done by Popovic.
Castro on in any game.
Easy, yeah.
Absolutely, but he's coming back from injury and he doesn't have a lot of his legs at this point, so you know he's done that very, very well. So I agree that from that point forwards it was only going to be them.
Yeah.
But they didn't need the assistance. They are sitting on top of the league for a reason.
Yeah.
They didn't need that poor decision and to switch it.
They're a good team, which makes this performance even more impressive from the Phoenix. I have not seen them Perth play this season. I haven't seen any of their games. And I turned to someone halfway through the game and went, how are Perth on top of the table when they're playing like this?
But they weren't playing badly. That was us.
Exactly. That's the thing. And so that's what is really hard to take about this 1-1 draw, is that this is a game that... if Perth got themselves back into it by their own accord, fair play to them. They're a good team.
Yep.
But for them to be so heavily assisted by such a poor decision to give a red card just really grates on me. And I think a 1-1 draw all up is probably fair, but not the way that it happened.
Yeah,
no, I happen to agree.
If we had 11 men on the field and we'd still conceded that goal, you take that. You go, it's still a good draw. Fine.
Yeah.
But
it felt like we
didn't get the chance to find out if we could have held on for all three. Because we would have been fighting tooth and nail to get 3 points out of
it. And you know what? We still were. You look at the way Jura made that interception right on the goal line. There was, I think, Ollie Sales' performance after he came on was excellent. Absolutely excellent. I think Frosty made the point, and we should have talked about this as well, is how he was cleaning up behind his back line for those through balls. And whilst it wasn't as commanding as I would have liked, he committed himself, he came out, and he got to the ball each time.
There was never any hesitation, and when he made a call to get to that, he got there and cleared it. And
absolutely. Every time he was coming for it, it felt like the potential to make himself look a right dick, but he got there every time, and that's the part that matters. Everyone in the crowd was on edge going, oh, shit, what's about to happen here? If he misses this, we're stuffed. But he didn't. He cleared every single one of them, and he knew what he was doing. You know, as a keeper, that's one of the key things, is if you're going to commit, you've got to fully commit, and he absolutely did. Might not have been the prettiest football, but it was effective, and that's all we need.
And even more impressive by the fact that he had to come on without knowing he's about to come on. That happened very quickly, and all of a sudden he's back in A-League football again.
Yeah, so 10 minutes in or something.
In a funny turn of events, I was joking with Sean Gill earlier in the day about if they were going to risk Ollie in the game in the afternoon. I'm like, surely you risk him there because there's no chance he's coming on. How wrong I was.
This is all your fault, Dave.
It is all your fault. That was a pretty nasty collision too.
It was. Do we know if he's all right? We know he didn't seem to have gone for X-rays.
So from what I think,
surely is a week out.
I think they did the concussion protocols at the stadium.
Yeah.
Decided there was no need for him to go to the hospital,
which is a good sign.
Yeah, which is a really good sign. But I think it's likely that Ollie starts this week in Sydney.
The concussion's not a thing to mess around with.
And especially the precautions they were taking around the neck injury, potential neck injury there as well, means that, just don't take any chances. That, like, even if it was just concussion, you've had someone with a serious knock to the neck.
I think if they were really worried about the neck, he would have gone for x-rays. I think they were cautious with it, as they should
precautions,
be.
Yeah.
When they checked him back in, you know, a stable environment rather than out on the grass, we're not so worried about the neck. Or the other thing, obviously, with the way he made contact is you might have had cheek or something like that, jaw fracture even. It's better safe than sorry. The fact he didn't go for any trip to the hospital for x-rays says they checked him inside and it's just the concussion and maybe a bit of soreness to worry about
I'd be very surprised if Curto played this weekend. I think it's Sale as a lock. It raises the question about who's going to be the backup keeper.
In reality as well, I mean, and this is just me getting up on a high horse, having had my share of concussions as a keeper, you should be taking 4 to 6 weeks out for a good concussion.
Absolutely,
At the professional level, it's a worry that we don't see that. Obviously, as a fan, I would like Curto to be out there as soon as possible, but I do think we're, across all sport, not just football, a bit too blasé about brain injuries.
And rugby's finally getting there.
More careful with that.
Rugby's finally getting there. Football is so much more lenient on these things. You see far too often players just get sent straight back out after a massive concussion. And
correct.
It's just like,
rugby at least are not doing that. I think football's getting better, but the stand down periods for how long they're actually not playing is still not great. You know, players are out 1 or 2 weeks when no doctor in their right mind is actually recommending that to average Joe Bloggs on the street, who isn't a professional sports person taking knocks to the head constantly.
I had a mate who took a massive knock to the head. It was probably earlier this year, and he was still having headaches Absolutely. Months later.
Yeah.
So it's very, very easy when you do take a massive hit for that to happen.
Yep.
I actually think this falls at a quite a bad time because I think that Scotty Bassalet may have been in for a guest appearance as the number two if he hadn't been going to the Club World Cup.
Well, he's only away for a week and a half, assuming they don't win all the games.
He won't be away for 3 weeks.
No, he won't be.
He's away for 3 weeks. We'll get to that.
he can still come back and do it. I think Zach Jones is on the bench this weekend, but we'll talk about this later. But is there any other talking points from this game? Oh, Rob's interview, where he comes out and says that.
Yep.
But other talking points from the game itself that anybody has? No.
Cool. No. Nice to see us playing good football. We need to score goals.
Makes a change, right?
But it's promising. I think Rudan will be very happy. I think the players will be very happy. And I think in some ways, getting robbed by the VAR might actually fire the boys up. So that's not necessarily the worst thing.
Yeah. Well, it's a pretty bad thing. But
it's bad for this result, but I think for the next game, it'll mean there's some fire in the bellies.
Considering who we're playing next, I think a little bit of fire in the belly is going to go a long way.
Well, given that the VAR is most likely to help out Sydney FC over any other club. Rob's interview where he jumped on the radio with Piney the next morning, and opened by saying, "I'm not a football person, but," and then goes on to make some points about how we get inexperienced referees, how the assistant referees aren't actually assistant referees, they're just lines people because they don't do anything, how the VAR is poor, all these points that were just, it was just strange to have Rob Morrison, who doesn't know football, on the radio saying those things and not saying. I can see the points he was trying to make, but he wasn't making them very well because he didn't have.
He's not wrong with what he says. No, but perhaps he needed to word it slightly differently.
When he was making the point about us being a breeding ground for referees, which is a testing ground for referees, that's probably true. On the whole, we probably get the more inexperienced referees. We certainly still get games with Chris Beath and Jared Gillette and that kind of thing. It's not every game that's like this, but then for him to focus in on one referee, Adam Kearsey, 8 of his 21 games have been riffing us, and that was the only point he could make about it. That just seemed to weaken his position on it a little bit. I'm not sure he's the person you want on the radio talking about football. When Piney got into the expansion stuff later on, expansion independent A-League, Rob came into his own. He was all over that stuff, and the stark difference between those two things was interesting to me.
It's hard not to put my job I've done for many years into this position, but I think the media training around that is definitely a problem. I think he had a couple of talking points, but he didn't know his talking points well enough. And I think while the points he did make are not wrong, he didn't have the kind of just pure knowledge to talk about it and talk at length about it. He could make his one point and that was all. And he didn't necessarily make those well. Whereas when he's talking about expansion, he's been living and breathing that for 2 years now. He knows that inside and out. And so I think that was the difference. Is one element of that conversation, there were a couple good bullet points for him to talk on, but there was nothing deeper in the surface than that. Whereas the expansion stuff, he knows that. And so I think if he's going to go on there and try and talk that stuff, the prep needs to be better. He needs to really know the material. And rather than straying across, 50 points, which I don't think any Phoenix fan would necessarily disagree with. I think if you talk to average Joe Bloggs Phoenix fan, we all feel at times like we're the poor cousin and there's a bit of a bias and all that stuff. I think he's playing right into a wheelhouse that people listening on the radio would have got on board with, but he spread it too thin rather than focusing on one or two reasons and really nailing them and knowing them. He tried to talk about 50 different things, and it meant it got a bit muddled and lost.
Yeah. I mean, the pull quotes that have made it into the rest of the media after that are the ones he's after.
Correct.
Phoenix accused FFA of bias against them.
Yeah, which is like that. Great. Which, is which says the interview was fine, but I agree. You listen to it, and it's a little bit start-stop fumbly.
I just find it puzzling that we're sending Rob out to do the football interviews.
The problem is you want to talk about some stuff, and I think Rob is the guy who's going to pay the fine, has gone, "I'll do it."
Yeah,
and your media person's not there at the moment as well. They're away.
But I mean,
The media person's not going to be doing that anyway. No. Though it was going to be Domi or it was going to be Rob.
That's the thing. Right? I think Domi's a better position for this. Domi knows football more than Rob and can make those points a little bit better. Yeah. I think so. If Rob was Tony Sage, Tony Sage knows football. He could do that stuff. So
But I think the call has been, We're walking a fine line here. If I get fined, let it be me.
Yeah.
Which hasn't happened. We have not been fined. They've said they're not fining Rob or Rudan for any of their comments, which is great because they both went in with 2 feet studs up.
And
unlike Larry.
They did not slip.
Yeah, unlike Larry. To be fair, the comments, they feel justified in this situation purely because of what happened on the weekend. And they're probably being lenient because this is quite... has caused quite an emotive reaction.
I think there's been similar situations before where decisions have been wrong and coaches and other officials have still copped a fine.
100% agree.
I think we're very lucky not to have copped it.
I agree. I think they're practicing some leniency for a reason. Because they well and truly could fine both of them easily.
Oh, absolutely.
Have they said that they haven't warned Rudan?
I just know they're not finding
it. So they might be privately, we can see where you're coming from, but just be careful in future. Yeah. And that would make sense given the situation.
And the fact that Greg O'Rourke called Domi to apologise also says something.
Yeah, that's strange. Doing that before the referees had their meeting on Monday to discuss the issue, that seems strange to me, but that's an entirely separate thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm just trying to bring up the other results from the round because we've talked about one game of football for 49 minutes, which I think is our record so far.
Wow, that's impressive.
There were a lot of talking points in this game. For a 1-1 draw, there were a lot of talking points.
There was actually a lot went on in this game, eh?
Yeah. Roy upside down.
Still, that's going to be the highlight of the season for me.
My glasses that I was wearing. All sorts of things happened in this game.
We were talking highlights or lowlights?
The photo of me with the Roy mask. That's the thing we didn't talk about. We got robbed of pizza. Yeah. The VAR robbed us of pizza.
Nick Waldron robbed us of pizza.
We were 10 minutes away from Hell Pizza giving everyone a free snack pizza with their masks.
Nick Waldron owes 4,900 people a gourmet Hell Pizza.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just when there was no thunder.
Brings you.
They did say at the post-match, though, that Hell are very keen to do it again this season. So hopefully we can finally bank some pizzas at some point this season.
You know what? I'd love for them to roll it out on the 15th of December against the Central Coast Mariners because that is probably going to be the most likely game we're going to win for a while. But yeah, the Burns Hell Pizza curse hit again.
I don't know. If we play like we did, we can beat any team.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I agree.
If we keep playing like that, we're top six.
Next week against Sydney, I reckon we got a good chance at a point away. We play like that against Mariners, I reckon we can pump them quite easily.
Yeah. The other games around, Adelaide United had a 2-1 win over Brisbane Roar. VAR affected. Stefan Mork sent off after knocking
Sent off while unconscious.
He had no idea what was going on.
Poor bastard.
Again, I think
red card seemed
this one's right. Taylor Regan, as we talked about earlier, only getting a yellow card and not a red card.
A yellow card by the VAR.
So what happened here was that the referees were about to yellow card the wrong player and VAR for the eye gouge. And so VAR, under mistaken identity, which is one of the things VAR can rule on, said, if you're yellow carding them for the eye gouge, it wasn't that player, it was Taylor Regan. And so at that point, they then showed the yellow to Taylor Regan and turned into red. That's why VAR could get involved.
Have you seen the interaction between Taylor Regan and Adam Peacock on Twitter today?
Yeah, where Taylor Regan was apologising.
Yeah, and Adam Peacock called him out.
No, not Adam Peacock, because Adam Peacock was a good
guy.
Nick Meredith.
Sorry, it was Nick Meredith. I apologise.
No, because no one would have a go at Peacock. Everyone would love to have a go at Meredith. Has he blocked him yet?
Probably. I don't know.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, Taylor Regan coming back and saying, well, I've apologised. You're going to apologise to the rest of Australia for being shit at your job. It was excellent.
It was good.
It was, yeah.
That redeems Taylor Regan's act for me. We should.
I don't know that it redeems
Get rid of the suspension. Give him an extra 2 weeks to do things on the field.
It's a thing that it's nice to see that not only does every fan who's not from Brisbane, I think even some fans from Brisbane, but the players know about it too. They know he's just an absolute flog.
Yeah.
And I'm still not blocked by him, so fun.
That's ridiculous. I'm unblocked, which is really annoying because I can see his tweets again. Although, good in this case.
Unfollow him.
The fact that VAR didn't recommend...
We've just reached 5-1 now.
Yeah. So the goals have all gone in. We've talked for long enough that it's almost over. The fact that VAR didn't say that this should be a red card for eye gouging is ridiculous. That's the thing we didn't talk about a penalty. The penalty shout in our game on Fenton.
Definitely a pen.
Nah, no pen for me.
100%.
I think in VAR era, this is a pen, but I don't want this to be a penalty. I don't think this is enough conduct for penalty.
I think it's a pen.
There's contact. It should be. P was pulled back. Yeah. It should
at the very least, if the slide from Lowry is worth looking at, this is a decision that goes to a video review, and the on-field ref should get to have a look at this.
In the context of the rest of the game, I think this should be a penalty. In the context of, do I think this is a foul? I don't think it should be a penalty.
I think if we're considering the threshold to be, these are things the ref should get to have a look at, this is absolutely in that realm. And if he decides it doesn't reach his own threshold, I'm fine with that.
Sydney FC had a 2-1 win over the Central Coast Mariners. Matt Simon was trending on Twitter in Australia because he scored a goal, and then cancelled out by Adam Lafondra and Brandon O'Neill. One of the Killer Bees. Hashtag crossover. Mountain Victory were very impressive against the Wanderers, winning 4-0 and making up the entirety of Boz's team of the week. All 11 players, I believe, were from Mountain Victory, which is probably accurate the way this round went. Nobody else really put themselves on fire. But
I disagree. I think we played bloody well.
True. Good point, actually.
If you were to pick a standout, though, who would it be?
from our team.
Yeah.
Roofer.
I think we were good across the park.
Yeah.
Similar to how in previous weeks I've said we've been bad across the park. Yeah. I feel like this week there wasn't one man I went, yep, he went out there, he gave it his all and he changed it. It was Roofer. I think he was good.
Yeah. I can't pick one, but I would pick Krishna and Durante.
Goals to Honda Rolbiana. No idea if that's right. My Italian that I'm trying to learn definitely hasn't helped me yet. Costa Barbarossa and Terry Antonis at the end. But 3-0 at half-time, that game was over very quickly. Melbourne City also 3-0 over Newcastle Jets. A couple of great goals here. Riley McGree early on, I think 70 seconds in or something. Luke Bratton just before the half with an absolutely outstanding half volley. Flicked it up for himself and into the back of the net. Easily got all around. And Lachlan Wales in the 78th making that 3-0. This weekend we have Sydney FC away on Saturday night at 7:30. And I was not looking forward to this, but if we can put in a performance like we did against Perth, I think we're a good shout for a point here. And that's what I hope that we're going to try and do, is just put in the same performance against a team like Sydney.
Did I pick a draw for us last week? I think I did, didn't I?
Maybe, I can't remember.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. What a genius.
Yeah. You're a nit, you know.
Austin and I both picked 4-1 losses, and you said a 1-0 win. You said this was going to be the game because of who we're playing and how we've been playing.
I take back my genius call, but I was closer than both of you, so that's all.
Well, it should have been. It should have been a 1-0 win.
By the way, I'd be claiming the 1-0 win is still accurate.
Yeah.
But, Sydney FC, how do you think we're going to go? Do you think we're going to be the team that went out against the Wanderers and got lost 3-0? Or do you think we're going to be the team that played Perth and drew 1-1?
I think we're going to be the team that played Perth, but I still think we will lose.
Those are exactly the words I was about to say. I don't necessarily think we'll be exactly the team that played Perth. I think the travel will affect us slightly, but I think we're going to be much closer to that end of the spectrum than we have been. And I think we'll go out there and probably lose something like 2-1,
yeah,
but it'll be a 2-1 we're proud of, where we've gone out, we've scored a good goal, we've played good football, but it's away, it's against a good side, and... You know,
and what I think this will do will be a catalyst for the two following home games.
Yeah, which will be fantastic.
The Mariners against Newcastle Jets, and I think if the performance we put out against Sydney is a good performance, I think we get two wins in the next 2 weeks.
That is the wind making it seem like we're having an earthquake, but just the wind. I think I agree. I think that we need to be targeting 6 points from those two home games.
Even 4 points would be a good result.
Given the way the season's gone, we've now got 3 losses in a row followed by a draw.
It's a long season.
Yeah, but we're quickly running out of, like, we're almost all the way through the first third of it. Like,
almost all the way through. After these two home games, that we're halfway through our home games.
Yeah, exactly.
We're so heavily loaded at the start of the season because of availability in the second half of the season.
Yeah, so... It runs out, winning a few games together can skyrocket you up. Putting together a few losses in a row with only a couple of draws surrounding them keeps you down the bottom.
Yeah, but I think we're building to a point where we're not surrounding losses. I think draws and wins are the way we're shaping up there. I think this one good performance has me going, we could string together 4 or 5 draws in a row, and actually that'll be more than enough to get the 6 if we can continue that sort of form for an extended period. We don't need to be winning every single game, so long as we're taking points, even off good sides like Perth.
And if you look at the game that on from the weekend, if that had finished 1-0, as it should have done, we're sitting 6th on 7 points.
Yeah. I think previous seasons we've been in a position where we know we can't take anything off the top 4, and so we've had to get 3 out of those around us. I think the performance we put in has me going, no, we can take points off a top 4 and we don't need to be worried about any other side. There are no games here where I think we walk in going, this is probably a loss, and so we have to get 3s out of Mariners.
Before I get to that point you guys are in, I think I need to see this a couple more times.
Yes.
We've seen it from one game, and I've seen...
And a good 45 against Adelaide the week before.
But then I've seen shit performances on 3 absolutely. Occasions... And at the moment, I am enjoying that we're seeing a different side to the Phoenix, but I'm not convinced yet that is the Phoenix.
No, I agree. I'm not convinced, but that's why I think 4 points out of those two games would actually be fine.
A draw this weekend would make me much more comfortable with that.
Yep,
just 4 points from those. Five or six points from these 3 games, I'd be happy with.
Yeah,
if that turns into needing 2 wins in those second 2 games, for me, that would be where I would sit. But yeah.
You get a bonus point.
A bonus point. What, for?
I don't know. It'd be like the A-League to bring in something like bonus points halfway through a season, wouldn't it?
Oh, Darth Vader handing them out. Star Wars round bonus points. The Wanderers are taking on the Mariners on Friday night at 9:50 p.m. our time. Melbourne's victory hosting Adelaide from Marvel Stadium, which is just ridiculous, after our game on Saturday.
And then on Sunday, which one's Marvel? I know they've renamed one
Etihad.
Okay, yeah.
And why did they do that?
It's sponsored by Marvel.
And that's it?
Yeah.
So the actual stadium is, or is it they've just named it for this game?
No.
The stadium is sponsored by the Marvel company.
Yeah. Okay.
Weird.
Yeah.
The late game on Saturday is Perth hosting Melbourne City, which actually is probably going to be the pick of the round, given the way those two teams are playing. Perth playing generally really good, Melbourne City coming into form. And then Newcastle Jets host Brisbane Roar, which is probably going to be the worst game of the round on Sunday night, 7 p.m. our time. On to the under-17s. So I think since we last potted...
Before we do.
Sorry. Yep.
The news from the next today that the...
That's his collar, by the way.
Adam Peacock's collar.
That's quite bothersome, actually. Yeah.
Yep. You should have a go on about him on Twitter for that. Get Taylor Regan to tweet Adam Peacock about his collar.
Okay. The game in Auckland has been moved from the February 16th to February the 15th due to ground availability.
Yeah.
And it has obviously been confirmed to be played in Auckland for that date at Eden Park, 7:30 kickoff against the Victory.
Yep. I like Eden Park. I think it's my favourite out of all those grounds.
Agreed.
Even with 8,000 people, which is about what the Phoenix will get maximum, it seems pretty full. It seems you're close to the action for football, and so
it doesn't seem pretty full. It seems very empty.
But there's
a lot to like about Eden Park, but it feels empty because you've only got people on one side, and even that side feels sparse.
Yeah. It feels no emptier than Westpac Stadium feels.
Correct.
For example, so.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And Mount Smart still feels empty.
But 8,000 in QBE actually feels like there's a crowd there.
Yeah, true.
But Eden Park is much easier to get to. Like you can walk to it from town.
You're not
going to
get 8,000 at QBE.
No, exactly. Yeah,
no, you get 4,000. You can walk out there if you really want to. I've done that before, and when I've been very
public
early
transport cam, the train goes right there.
Yeah, but dude, it's like literally 25-minute walk. It's nothing.
Or a 3-minute train ride.
Yeah,
or whatever
3 minutes
it is.
On the train is awesome. Although having to like come out and then like curve back in is a bit weird. But
save your money, buy another beer.
The new market stop is a bit weird, but the City Rail Loop will fix that.
Exactly.
All our billions of taxpayer and ratepayer dollars.
Yes.
That's a different podcast.
Yeah.
Have
you not been listening to our city planning podcast?
No, I don't think my employer would be particularly happy with that.
The worst plan of all time, and we design a city.
Ooh.
This actually sounds amusing.
Well, we've already had discussions about another podcast, a little empire we got
we
going.
We have not.
Okay, Neil and I haven't had a conversation about our own Spinoff podcast.
So you're going to do the...
We're going to do Ted Up Moat, the worst musicals of all time, and watch different musicals every week. But
that'd be cool, actually. I'd probably listen to that.
Yeah, adding a city planning podcast on the cards. Keep an ear out. Support us on Patreon, it might happen. But I am fully on board with doing Eden Park. I think it's a shame it's having to be a Friday night, because I probably won't go to it as a result. If it was on Saturday, I'd definitely go. And I can see other people being in the same boat for that.
It certainly made it difficult for me with the travel arrangements I already had in place.
It's because of venue availability. They're only playing at Eden Park because nothing else is available. I think there's Athletics Champs on at Mount Smart and something else at QBE, or other way around, something. And they're not choosing Eden Park by choice, so... They are hamstrung by the situation. Westpac Stadium's out. No one in the country wants to pay the Phoenix to host a game anymore, so that's the only place to go that makes it profitable. So makes a lot of sense to me, and I'm looking forward to it.
And I don't want to stereotype, but I'm going to slightly.
Eden Park's in the football area rather than... Is that what you're going for?
No, I was going to say this is a Victory, so Honda should be here, and there's actually a good Asian community in Auckland.
Actually, that's
there's a
really
hell of a lot of the Asian media are based up there. It feels like that could be a nice little tie-in that might actually draw some interest in. If you had to take it anywhere in the country, that's not a bad place to take it, Auckland. Eden Park is the ground you can have it at in Auckland.
So. I don't think that's stereotyping. I think that's just accurate. I think it's an accurate statement to say that the Asian population is much more dense than it is in Wellington, for example. Yeah. It'll be fun. On to the other things that we can talk about. I think last week the under-17s had just lost their semi-final. Under-17 woman. Anyway, they have since won the third, fourth playoff and placed third, which is fucking outstanding.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yep. Like, if you had said to me at the start of the year that a New Zealand side was going to come third at a FIFA World Cup, I would say you are absolutely bonkers.
What's our highest finish at a Club World Cup? That's run by FIFA, isn't it?
Third,
yeah.
Yep.
It's not a FIFA World Cup.
I just wanted to see how wound up you'd get by that.
I'm turning your mic off. Your mic is now off, Dave.
To be fair, of all the World Cups that are on this year, I would have picked Team Wellington as the most likely of all of those teams to achieve it. So.
Yeah.
I still wouldn't have expected it to be particularly likely.
Made the point tonight that I don't think they're getting past the first two rounds. So
fantastic result for the girls, absolutely phenomenal.
And they had to hang on for dear life in that Canada game. But they scored after 16 seconds, and it was a great goal too. Like that team has just done so well for the amount of resources that's available to them and the playing staff that they have, and
it shows a really bright future for the women's game.
Yeah,
it's just
absolutely
phenomenal.
And it builds on
forward to watching how well the full football Ferns are going to be doing in a few years from now with those players coming through.
We've always had a stronger women's side of the game than the men's side, and to have these players coming through, like seeing these guys in 2 years' time in the under-20s is going to be a lot of fun to watch them play like that again.
Yeah, we have very talented female sportsmen across all levels of sport, and the fact that now that's filtering down into such a young age, because obviously there's more competition for places, and those players have to be better to make those teams, and it's just paying dividends further and further up the field. So it's really, really good.
I think a lot of credit has to go to Leon Burney and his coaching staff for the way that we played here.
Yep.
These weren't games where they were just trying to get a goal and hanging on. They were playing football.
Yep.
They played football against Canada. They played football against Japan and got results that they deserved on the back of it. Whereas you look at the Ferns game against the full Ferns game against Japan, where they just weren't even trying to play football. It's just stark contrast. And the fact that we were able to get results and get a placing at a World Cup doing that really shows that we don't have to do that as New Zealand. We don't have to go and be like, we are the underdog here. We have to play defensive football and try and suffocate the opposition. Like, I hope that the men's side can learn a little bit from that, because we see that too often a little bit in the under-20s.
Accept that you're the underdog, but don't let that dictate how you play your game.
Play your own game.
Play your own game.
If the match situation dictates that that's what you should do, and certainly in the last 20 minutes of this game against Canada, they were back to the wall defending when it was 2-1. That's fine, but don't go out there just making that your game plan.
They've got two goals to put themselves in that position in the first place.
They've proven to the rest of New Zealand football that we can do this. We can do it playing good football. So that's really cool.
And in some ways, it ties in nicely to what Jose was saying only a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Similar stuff about that's what they absolutely intend to do at the Club World Cup. You know, they know they're going to be the underdogs. It's their first time at this level, and, you know, they're still going to go out there and try and play their game. And I think, like you say, if the game situation changes and dictates that they need to do something else, then they will. But they're going to go out there from the outset and try and play their game. And that's what we should be doing, even when we're the underdogs, even when we're not expected to get anything here.
Yeah. So, yeah, congratulations to them. Been a bit weird seeing the general media just clamour over them, and the Prime Minister being like, I've always been a big fan of yours, or all the MPs.
I actually quite like this morning, is that Jacinda, when she saw him at the airport, went back and had a photo taken with them.
Oh, sorry, yeah, it wasn't her, someone else said that, oh, I've always been a big fan of yours ever since I found out about you last week, which is just... people are using it for their own publicity. I don't like that. Yeah, exactly. But no, Jacinda running over to get a photo with them, I like that. So
I hope that we can capitalise on that momentum being built in the women's side of the game. I think we've seen in the past New Zealand football fail to do exactly that.
2010.
And, yeah. Hopefully we can see this be a sign for building up that National Women's League and stuff like that, so we can actually have that strength continue.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a thing we need to do. We know that women's side of the game is actually the real potential for New Zealand. We are a small fish on the men's side, but actually we're a reasonable fish on the women's side, and we should be trying to build and grow that and nurture it in the way it deserves. So hopefully with the review that we've seen coming through and all of that stuff, that we actually direct some of those resources to the women's side and can really capitalize on it for once, unlike what we failed to do before.
Mm. And speaking of Team Wellington, they are off in Dubai now. They've arrived, getting ready to play against Al Ain. When is that game? Is it next weekend?
Thursday.
Okay, cool.
4:30 a.m.
Might get up for that one.
Well, I'd be pretty disappointed if you didn't, to be honest.
I haven't watched the last few Auckland City games where they played Club World Cup, but this game I'll get up for.
I feel like we have a bit more of a vested interest in
the
team.
I think so. I care a little bit more about Team Wellington.
Watto's biggest fan. You better be up.
Yeah.
He's going to score at a World Cup, and you're going to see it.
Okay, so...
shit touch. It'll be a shit touch too, where it accidentally goes back in the net. I bet you.
What do we have to... what does Watto have to do, or what does the team have to do for you to get Watto on the back of your shirt? Back of your T-dub shirt?
If they make the semifinals, if they win two games, I will get a T-dub shirt that says Watson on the back of it.
Awesome.
And get him to sign it. There
Corny,
we go.
Corny, I hope you're listening to this. Make that happen.
Yes.
No. What if that's he scores a hat trick?
Sure.
Just in this first game, but they still lose.
Oh, no. If he scores a brace, I'll do it.
If he scores a brace, all right. Yeah. So two goals.
A brace, all the team makes at the semifinals. There we go. Done.
How many goals over the tournament?
Well, how many?
If they don't make the semis, but he scores two goals over the tournament. I just want to see you in a Watto shirt.
You just want me to say if he takes the field at the World Cup.
Just buy him a Watto shirt.
Yeah.
Get Watto to sign it. Get Watto to present it to him. It'll be great.
Yes.
That would be hilarious, yeah. Okay.
Anyway, I think that's it for this week on all the football. Unless anybody has anything pressing to add or any nasty rumours I can help spread about Frosty.
Was there any National League we should be talking about? I know there wasn't.
T-Dubs drew. Yeah.
T-Dubs drew. They deserve to win. They had three shots cleared off the line. They hit the crossbar twice.
Canterbury, and they
still almost lost to a last-minute shot from Canterbury, which hit the crossbar. Canterbury had nothing.
The Wenix went down very late to Southern. 2-1. Yeah. 93rd minute winner for Southern, I think. So they're still on 0 points this season. Almost got their first point. But obviously, Team Wellington's away. I don't really know what else is happening in football this weekend. And can't bother looking it up because we have already been going for over an hour. So,
all right.
I'm just going to wrap it there, I think. So, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back in about 5 minutes to record
with our real host.
Sorry, I was about to say that we'll be back in about 5 minutes recording The Worst Game of All Time, which you should definitely listen to. But also,
patreon.com/TWGOAT.
Oh, yes. Also, Frosty will probably be back next week, and therefore I will not be. So, enjoy that. Have a great time, everybody. Goodbye. Calling New Zealand Football a Reasonable Fish brings you Crossover Podcasts bring you
Sitting Through That Fucking Game Again brings you
Getting to Barely Watch That Game Again Was Awesome brings you Fuck the VAR brings you
Games Ruined by the VAR brings you Nick Waldron Out of His Depth brings you
No Audio Recordings of Jurors Post-Match Comments bring you
The VAR robbing the Phoenix of free fucking pizza fucking brings you...